big story in Washington State has been those employment security checks, those unemployment checks, which are being funded by the federal government, but which have been slow to arrive because apparently we have been targeted by fraudsters. And Hannah, we're going to talk with the head of the Employment Security Department in just a moment, but bring us up to date on this story. And do we have any idea why Washington State in particular seems to be the epicenter for this?
Well, and there's a couple of reasons why these state believes that we've been targeted. One, we have the second highest weekly benefit amount just normally in normal times among the states. So that makes us an attractive target. And then also we were among the first to pay out the federal benefits that all came extra with this pandemic. So that combined with our large, you know, you can get up to $1,300 a week, I think, if you combine all of those together in this state. So that's why they thought we were a target. And the commissioner has also acknowledged that, you know, we waived the waiting week early on. And that kind of does away with, in some cases, the ability to check, verify that with employers that people are legitimately filing for unemployment. So they're trying to make sure that they push the pause button a little bit now and get that taken care of, because there's been just a massive amount of growth of these fraudulent claims of people who are doing this in a network that have gotten a hold of stolen identities from before that are not a part of a breach that happened at the state Employment Security Department, but other data breaches that have happened prior elsewhere. And I think hundreds of millions of dollars in May, she said yesterday, have been paid out. So they're working very hard to make sure that that doesn't continue.
Okay. Commissioner Susie Levine is online with us now. Good morning and welcome. I heard the interview with you this morning. You seem pretty upset by this. Do you have any idea why Washington State in particular seems to have been targeted?
Thank you so much for having me on, Dave. First off, I want to thank people for staying home and staying healthy. That's the most important thing. And our responsibility has really been about how do we get benefits out quickly and effectively to as many Washingtonians as we can who have been impacted by COVID-19. You know, Washington has an incredibly generous approach to unemployment insurance, the second highest maximum weekly benefit amount in the nation. And we were very effective at getting those benefits out, and we remain effective at that. We were one of the first states to implement the provisions in the Federal CARES Act that allows people who had previously been ineligible, such as those who are independent contractors and those who are self-employed workers, to be able to access the benefits, as well as to access for all unemployment benefit recipients the additional $600 per week per person that was being and continues to be available. So that amount of money and the fact that Washington State was among one of the first to deploy it, I suspect what makes us a very interesting target for criminals, these very sophisticated criminals. But it is happening all across the nation, Dave, and it is something that is not new. And it is something that we are working very hard in partnership with federal law enforcement to stop from happening, to get the money back, and to take care of those people who have been victims, but most importantly, to continue to work on getting these important benefits to those who so desperately need them across the state.
So there was no particular data breach that exclusively affected Washington State. This was the fraudsters shopping around for the most generous state to defraud.
I suspect so. And when you look at the other states that have been impacted...
Which are the other states that have been targeted?
So from what I understand, basically most have had some sort of impact, whether it's Massachusetts, whether it is Michigan, whether it is Rhode Island, whether it is other states that have been reported on in various pieces. But the other aspect to keep in mind, to your first part of your question, we have not had a data breach at the Employment Security Department. What the criminals are doing is using stolen information that they had previously taken from other breaches, like the Equifax breach or the other multitude of breaches that have happened over the past few years. And they basically are so sophisticated, they compile an understanding of individuals with their data. And then they are using that stolen data and using that to then claim for benefits on our site. So that is what's happening. We call it imposter imposter fraud.
Okay, but the money's got to go somewhere. So when you send out the money, and for example, it's sent out of state, wouldn't your computers detect that? That would be suspicious, wouldn't it?
So, Dave, I'm not going to give a roadmap for what we are seeing at this point. I don't want to help other criminals come in and try and execute what has been happening. We are working hard on cranking up our various parameters around catching the fraud before it happens. We already had many detection mechanisms in place and have increased those. This is a constant balance to look at between reducing friction for individuals to receive benefits versus increasing friction to keep criminals from perpetrating fraud.
So here's what I'm getting at. I would like to see them arrested, is what I'm saying. And I'm wondering are they using cryptocurrency? Is this just going to be something the state's expected to do? Or this sounds to me like something the federal government ought to be very interested in, especially when you're having these unauthorized money transfers. I assume they'd be in handcuffs right now if they were wiring them to known bank accounts. So they must be using some kind of underhanded criminal syndicate. And I want to know don't give me any details, but I'd like some reassurance that there are some high-powered investigators who are hunting them down right now.
You have that assurance. We are working in close partnership with federal law enforcement. It is an active criminal investigation, and they are working very hard to track down the criminals as well as the money and get that money back. And we are working in close partnership with them to do so.
Now, what is this? I know you're trying to get things corrected as fast as possible, but at one point I remember there was an appeal that people not call the Employment Security Department while they got a handle on this. So what kind of delays can people expect in their checks because of this problem?
We are now, typically when people use direct deposit, we are able to pay them within 24 to 48 hours. We are now saying 48 to 72 hours so that we can add a layer of analysis on the applications that have come in order to further determine those that might be fraudulent in order to weed them out and to make sure that what we are paying out are legitimate claims.
Let's go to Hannah. Hannah?
And then, yeah, Commissioner Levine, can you give an update? Because I know that there were tens of thousands of folks still stuck in adjudication or in that pending claim situation because of discrepancies. Does this impact those people? And if not, what are we doing? How are we doing on that 100% goal of getting everybody paid out by mid-June?
Thank you for bringing that up. We are working through that, and we have been making tremendous progress. We did scale back the incoming phone lines in order to make more space for outgoing phone lines, and our adjudicators were able to increase their productivity by 90% this past week in that sort of first kickoff week of the Operation 100% program. We are continuing to do a smaller level of that, so we can take more incoming calls, but we are still predominantly doing outbound calls, and that is working well. We also have our technology developers working hard on ways to bulk clear certain issues that we know are not as relevant during the pandemic or where people should be eligible for PUA and just need the determination. PUA is the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, the expanded assistance from the Federal CARES Act. And so that is continuing apace. And we are still on track towards our goal of mid-June for having everybody within that sort of as of May 1st adjudication queue addressed. However, what we are seeing is as we go through this exercise, more people are ending up in adjudication as we identify more issues, and we are needing to resolve those. So, again, looking at those that have been in the queue since May 1st, we're making terrific progress on that. And at the same time, we know that there are going to be more people who are in need of assistance.
What can you say to those people? We're hearing from people who've been waiting for 10 weeks to get their payments and are struggling. What would you say to those people?
We are looking directly at them, and I am really pressing my team in there, doing a great job in working through, especially those that have been waiting longest. And so we will be in touch very soon if we have not already been.
Susan Levine is the commissioner of the Employment Security Department. Now, I want to ask you, do we get reimbursed for that money that has gone missing, and if we can't recover it? And is there any chance that we will run out of our allocation before you've been able to pay it all out?
So the money will not run out. Most importantly, people should know the money will not run out. We have a very strong trust fund that pays for state unemployment insurance. Frankly, most of the money that has been paid out thus far during this crisis has been federal money, both because of the pandemic unemployment assistance, the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, as well as the pandemic emergency unemployment compensation. These are the three monetary aspects of the Federal CARES Act that are distributed to and through the unemployment insurance system. Those are all federal, as well as other components of federal funds that are being paid out through unemployment insurance. So a majority is from the federal government. In terms of that which is paid out from the state, we are in good shape with our trust fund, and we are holding tight on that and projecting forward continued strength on our trust fund.
Because of this incident, are you going to have to make permanent changes either in the procedure for filing for unemployment or updating security systems, anything like that?
I think that overall this crisis, never mind this moment of this crisis, and this crisis, as Hannah knows very well, because you've both been with us in this journey, or as some would think of as an odyssey, really has pressed the question, not just here in Washington State, but across the entire country, of how do we better equip this economic shock absorber system for shocks not just 2 and 3X, which is what we had already prepared for with our economic cycle plan, but 10 or 15X, which is what we are seeing within this overall system. I'll give you an example. Adjudicators. They are the people who resolve questions and concerns, and they do not grow on trees. And so you can't just hire 1,000 more adjudicators. What can we do to create a national stockpile of adjudicators that we can tap into as needed and that are ready, like as reservists, for helping in these moments of economic crisis? What do we need to do in terms of properly funding our systems that are currently funded retroactively as opposed to proactively? And when you think about retroactively and you look back, the past 5 years have been boom time with record low unemployment. So if you are funding your system for handling large unemployment based on record low unemployment, you are naturally going to not have enough resources to handle a moment of crisis like this. I think that we have done an unbelievably amazing job given those factors and are continuing to work on and scale rapidly, and yet at the same time certainly have some challenges that we have faced and continue to face.
Is what we're doing enough to keep the economy intact so that we can have this this quick recovery that everybody would like to see?
That is a question that needs to be discussed not just with the Employment Security Department, but also with state and federal legislators and appropriators. I think one of the challenges that we have is using a system that requires so much validation and verification in order to provide individuals and businesses with economic support and stability when you're impacting not just 5% of the state, not just 10% of the state, but 30% of the state is, I would argue, should be a part of the solution, but should not be the majority of the solution. So I think that there is more that can and should be done, but I would want to bring other stakeholders, business and labor, into the conversation to explore what more we can do to support both individuals as well as employers, as well as labor across the state, as we explore, most importantly, what are the new skills that are going to be needed? What is the new normal that we need to be prepared for in both this first awkward phase of people returning to work in a socially distanced universe, and then longer term, where people are becoming more accustomed to other ways, more accustomed to other ways of working? And so I think it'll be both, it's an opportunity and it's exciting, and we also have an urgency of now.
Well, what we're seeing now is, to me, very similar to what Andrew Yang was talking about, because this is happening all over the country. These unemployment payments are going out for people staying home. Universal basic income, where at some point you have to have a way of quickly getting money into people's accounts, not just because of a coronavirus crisis, but because we have a change going on in the economy where there are some people whose skills will no longer be needed, and they are either too old or just don't have an interest in being retrained, and yet we have a consumer economy, and we need those people to be able to buy stuff. So where do you stand
on that?
I would
look at an opportunity around things like digital equity is something that we are seeing that's very important to drive towards, as well as how do we keep people lifelong career ready. And so while I think it is interesting to look at mechanisms like universal basic income to continue to keep people having money, at the same time, people need the dignity of work. And being able to equip people for those jobs, for the next version of their job, or for the new jobs that come into play also requires maintaining a robust education and training system. And if all of that funding is going straight into people's pockets and not into that system, then that system can't rely on how it can partner with business to create a robust way to evaluate what business needs are and future needs are, and then translate that into training and education mechisms.
And does
so I
that
think
work?
It's a blend.
Does it work? I mean, for example, the next step, apparently, I'm told, in the trucking industry is self-driving trucks, right? Can you retrain a trucker to be a coder?
What you may be able to do. So it's interesting. There's a gentleman named David Otter out of MIT with whom I've had many conversations and attended many of his presentations around the future of work, and also spoken with others who utilize a lot of transportation entities. It is not going to be a cliff. It is not going to be all of a sudden in 1 year we have rapid deployment of autonomous vehicles, but it is going to happen over a 10 to 15 year period. So what are we doing to help those individuals? They may not become a coder, but they may end up becoming an autonomous vehicle driver. They may end up providing customer support. They may end up providing some level of maintenance to that. And having been our ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein, where I saw a robust environment of apprenticeship and training, not just at the outset of one's career, but throughout one's career, I know that it is possible to do at scale in order to keep people lifelong career ready. And part of it is changing people's mindset from one and done, I did that education thing, I'm all done, to realizing that the pace of innovation is no longer in line with our pace of education. And we need to help people migrate into this new space. Because frankly, and I've heard this from healthcare executives, one of the most important things and contributors to people's health is a good job. And so it is not about just writing people off and saying, oh, they're not going to be able to get the skills for the next version of the job. That is not giving people enough credit for what they are able to do. And as we have seen in this crisis, when we have asked people to step up, they sure have, and far beyond what they ever imagined that they could do. And I've seen it in my own staff. People who never imagined being able to telework and had resisted it dramatically have taken the courses that we've given, the training that we've done, and love it and felt like, oh, my gosh, I never thought I could do that. So we have to have more faith in our people, in their ability to adapt and develop, and we have to invest in how we help them along. And I think that that is both the opportunity and the challenge that we face as a community and a society, and being able to ameliorate the huge chasm in digital equity that we have.
Anna.
Just a closing question for you, Commissioner Levine, is do you feel like you're getting a handle on the unemployment fraud situation, or do you expect it's going to get worse before it gets better?
I think that there are different phases of it, Hannah. I feel like we have been able to clamp down on what's going out, and now we need to focus on what we can get back, as well as how to better address those who have been impacted by this, where we are asking people to verify their identities and to get more information from them, and we need to rapidly address their needs as well. And I'm keenly aware of that and working very hard to do so.
Commissioner Susie Levine, Employment Security Department. Commissioner, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.